Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
This news just in from the Olympics. Simone Biles has decided to withdraw from the event finals for vault and the uneven bars. She's going to continue to be evaluated daily to determine whether to compete in the finals for floor exercise and the balance beam. This from USA Gymnastics just a few moments ago. And for Biles, her story this week has been well documented after getting a case of what everybody knows now is the twisties. When you get in the air and you lose yourself and you panic and you think you're going to fall and really get hurt, it's difficult to get your confidence back. And this is what she's been dealing with now. And I'm not surprised that she's withdrawing for the vault and the uneven bars. These are events that are kind of playing into your worst fears of the twisties with what you have to do. I'm still thinking that she's going to compete on the floor exercise, which has been her bread and butter. She's got a few more days before she's going there. The balance beam, I don't think we're going to see. But the floor exercise, if she's going to do anything, that's going to be the one she does. But clearly here she is withdrawing from the vault and the uneven bars, going to continue to be evaluated daily to determine whether or not she's going to compete later on. This is an developing story as things are just starting to get going now at the Olympics in Tokyo. Steve, this is something that, you know, when this story first came out and I saw the knee-jerk reaction of Simone Biles is un-American, Simone Biles is quitting, all of these things. Now that we see the way this story has evolved, oh boy, man, I feel bad for those people. I hope that they can sit back and say, yeah, I can look at myself in the mirror and say, I did good radio or I did good television where I did this. It was clear that whether or not you agree with the issues that she has, that she had issues. And now it's turning out that, hey, she is scared when she is competing because of what happened to her. And look, it happens when people want to go crazy and have some red hot take when it's a sport they don't really understand. Because look, how many of us really understand everything going into gymnastics? How many people knew the term twisties before we heard about it this week? And we've been hearing more about Simone Biles. And it's something where, look, I think that you owe it more to the story, to the sport, to everything going on, to really understand what it is going forward. And now that it's evolved into a, oh my goodness, you know, she can't get out there. She's lost her nerve. You know, I use the Tom Cruise Top Gun thing. You know, can't get back in the saddle, can't engage. That's exactly what's going on. She's lost her nerve. And I don't know if she's going to get it back. I hope she does. And if it's one event that she's going to do it, it will be the floor exercise in the finals. But boy, you go back to the beginning of this week when it was, oh, I can't believe it. She walked out, she quit, she all. I'm like, oh, wow. You know, do a little bit more, insight on that before. Hey, I just want to be the first one out there and say how un-American she is and have the clicks. It's a little bit more sophisticated than that. And
yeah.
If you disagree with her quit, okay, that I get. Hey, suck it up and go and do it. All right, I get that. But to sit here and back off and just go, oh, it's a black and white issue for this and she should be embarrassed. Wow. I mean, really, yeah. Now see how this has unfolded. You don't always have to be first with that. If some stories are like, you know what? Sometimes it's just important enough you talk about them. And then as they evolve, you want to seem smart. You want to seem like you know what you're talking about with things.
I don't see her competing again. And obviously she's qualified in all four of these individual finals. So that's August 1st through 3rd. The problem she's having is involved in all four of those events. So even on the floor exercise, you know, the tumbling runs, three or four in a routine. I just don't see her competing this week. I think she's done competing. As far as what you mentioned, that people maybe without much knowledge and very extreme in the immediate opinion, it was kind of like, you know, Mike Ditka as your sports talk host, the most extreme of kind of suck it up. What for me made it allowable, if you want to put it to those hosts, they should have made it allowable, is that this is a dangerous sport. This isn't someone like they're trying to power through a bad hamstring in the 200 meters or something. This is someone who's physically leaving the ground, and people are all the time in competition injured. I mean all the time in this sport. It's like if somebody had a mental health problem in NASCAR. Well, then don't go 200 miles an hour. You know what I mean? This is a little different than some other sports. What the one reservation I had was when she, with a serious problem and a dangerous sport, came out, I don't want other people who are, for example, coming up through athletics currently to look at that and say, oh, it's okay not to power through it, you know? Well, guess what? You're not in gymnastics, and you're not the face of the Olympics, and you're not all of these other things. So find the balance between those things. Sometimes you do need to power through. In this, I'm very happy she did not.
You know, and when you compare it to, oh, this is Tom Brady coming, I'll just throw this out there. Tom Brady coming out in the middle of the Super Bowl, right? This isn't, that's the comparison that's made to something like that, is that Brady just deciding he doesn't want to play. You know, I went out there, I wasn't feeling it. You know, I wasn't really focused. I just wasn't feeling it. So you know what? I'm going to come out. You need somebody else in the third quarter.
If Tom Brady throws an incomplete pass, it's second down. Okay. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. but what it more is it's, if you want to compare it to other sports, now that everybody really knows what's going on with Simone Biles, it's not an athlete just deciding not to play in the middle of the Super Bowl or the middle of the World Series. What it is, if you want to break it down in that way, it's Tom Brady in the beginning of the third quarter getting hit so hard, fumbling, turning the ball over. He doesn't really know where he is. His arm is hurting. He doesn't know that he can do it, and he is seeing ghosts. And he can say, you know what, I'm not ready to go back out there, and he needs some time to figure things out. Now, Tom Brady, who you have seen, and I've seen many times in his career, when you get around him, not so much him, when you get around him, mm-hmm. he is a bad quarterback. Some guys can throw under pressure in the pocket. He's not one of those guys.
Ask Michael Strahan.
You just get around him, and he throws early, and he throws low. That's Tom Brady's twisties, because that's the type of thing you're talking about is, hey, something happened to you mentally where, hey, I'm not in it because of my fear of being injured, or I don't have the confidence I can do what I'm doing now. It's something happens. It's not you just wake up and say, yeah, I'm not feeling it. She had a really bad vault, and that scared her, and she hasn't been able to come back and do it. And if you don't think there's something, an athlete's got an issue with that, that's a thing. That's a big mental thing. But when people don't understand sports, I want to be able to apply it, because I know football, I know baseball, I know basketball. I want to apply it and say, like, it's just like gymnastics. No, everything is different. All sports are different. The one good thing I think this week is everybody's learning more about gymnastics and how dangerous some of these things are when you go up and you're up in the air and you come down and you can land poorly, and that can happen. So that's a good thing, you know, that I've been seeing other gymnasts going, hey, wait, what she's got going on is this. This isn't you're just saying, you know what, I don't feel like it, I'd rather text on my phone. No, this is a serious thing that she has going on.
And how often have we seen in team sports where a guy is so either mentally or physically not right on the field, and he's hurting his team, and you say, why is he still in there? This would have hurt the team. You agree? If she had been in and tried to contribute to the team score, because of the way the scoring goes, three out, three scores are up, her score would have been awful.
Yeah, it's the same. Look, Devin Booker, and I keep going, poor Devin Booker, but this is what I go back to is, look, Devin Booker had to come out in the NBA Finals games because mentally he wasn't there. He was too wound up. He was fouling everybody, and it was, you know what, Devin Booker, you need to sit. That happens to athletes all the time. Athletes in any sport, hey, you know what, you got to come out and sit. A defensive back gets two pass interference penalties on him, come out of the game for 5 minutes. You need to sit. Mentally, you're not there. Okay, we need to get you back, get your confidence back. It so happens that way. Now, this is something that scared Simone Biles to the point where, hey, I don't know that I can compete. And it's not like she's a Johnny come lately. We're talking about the best gymnast in the history of the sport, who likes wearing goat leotards around. Like, she likes being the best, right? She doesn't like not being the best. She likes being the best. So this is not some, oh, look at this, it's a media creation, and we talked about her and we built her up. And she's not this. No, this is the greatest athlete of all time going, hey, I just can't do it right now. And it just seems so bad. Like, you're like they're beating down on an athlete who just says, you know, I just can't do it. I don't have it mentally. Well, you have to find it mentally. Okay, there is a bit of suck it up, but then there's a point where, okay, you know what, you can't just tell somebody to suck it up and go out and do it.
But it's dangerous sport, and that's what people need never forget in this whole conversation. This is not, I go back to the track analogy, somebody who's not leaving the ground, you know what I mean? Somebody who, even if they pull their hamstring, they're not going to the hospital for, you know, you see where I'm going with this. So when we hear, okay, she's in the four apparatus finals, or would have been this coming week, that she had qualified for at the Olympics. Okay, now we know the event finals for vault, that's a no, obviously, because we saw her even attempt the vault in practice this past week. Uneven bars, well, they're going to say she'll continue to be evaluated daily. Great, great. But the other two are floor exercise and balance beam. So it's gymnastics. It's all dangerous. It all involves the exact thing that she's going through. And by the way, you mentioned her resume, which is phenomenal. What if the Summer Olympics, hey, they're delayed a year, and she says, you know what, I'm almost 25 years old. That's it for me. Can you imagine the opinion
going
of
out? Yeah, I mean, going out like
this. She's the greatest of all time.
She's 24. Usually, people stop being gymnasts when they're 20.
Yeah,
you're 24. She's one of the old. You know, she's been around forever.
And waited
she's 24.
The extra year. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it really is. This is why I say, and now for the point of the next competition, is that being in the air and being high off the ground is a really big thing, right? This is where the twisties come from, and all the other events deal with you being off the ground, whereas on the floor exercise, you are jumping. I mean, look, she vaults herself off the floor and gets, you know, 30 feet in the air is amazing, but still at least you are on the floor competing. So this is why I'd say, you know, judging by if this is what it is, when you're not starting out off the ground, have to worry about a big dismount coming off of an apparatus where you're already in the air, and clearly that vaulting yourself in the air is the big thing. That's why I feel like, okay, the floor exercise, something she's done, you know, hundreds of times, best in the world at it. If she does anything, it's going to be that. Because I got to think, as an athlete, she's not going to want to leave these games without trying to do it one more time, because who knows what it's going to be next, right? It's the athlete who misses a whole season and wants to come back just for the final, you know, if I can just pitch in the last game of the year or the last week of the year so I don't ask myself questions about trying to come back for an entire winter. If I can just get over that mental hurdle and I'll be able to do it. Plus, if this is it for her, I think she wants to probably do one more. I think she'll probably do everything she can to do one more. So I'm thinking it's floor exercise or it's going to be nothing for Simone Biles holding out for the floor
exercise. I'm sure she would want to do two more, but I don't see her doing tumbling runs in the floor exercise. By the way, another analogy for sports. You remember who got the yips is Steve Sachs trying to throw to first base as a second baseman for the Dodgers in the 80s. Once again, and that was a very serious thing, and the only injuries incurred were, you know, the lady in the 10th row getting hit with the ball that was leaving the field all the time on the throw to first. That's nothing like the absolute dangerous sport of gymnastics. One thing that I didn't appreciate this week, and this may be a generational thing, she's in her 20s, but posting the videos now deleted of showing her with the bad landings on a couple events in uneven bars dismount, you know, with the twisting and the double back and all of that. And I feel like you're posting these just to try and prove, see, I'm terrible. Hold on. Let me videotape another one. See, I'm terrible. I can't go. That's the impression, and they have been since deleted, that I got on those two. I don't think she needed that for her case.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Right now, maybe you have noticed, the Glaze Across America tour has continued just at Cowboys camp today with the Rams, where if you remember, Jay Glazer brought us information a few months ago that one of his insiders said Matthew Stafford was going to throw 130 touchdown passes this year. Glaze joins us now. You can follow him on Twitter at Jay Glazer. That's at Jay Glazer. Glaze, happy summer, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. So good to be back doing this, man. Oh, my God. It's so good just to be around it again. Obviously, we weren't around it last year. So, man, it's God almighty. For between my ears, I love being around it. It's great.
What's the biggest change or something that you didn't think, I forgot about this, or I'm used to this now because now it's back to what it had been?
No, I always knew. It's funny because a long time ago, Dan Quinn says to me when I was doing Falcon camp, this is my 29th year doing this, 29th training camp. And Dan Quinn, about 5 years ago or something, I think like when Ballers is the hire, he said, why are you still coming around all these camps? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it's kind of moved up and on from this. I'm like, dude, you guys have been my social structure for 20-something years. There is no moving up and on from this. Like, this is my team. This is my family. Like, even though I'm not on your team and you guys are on different teams, I need a team for, again, the struggles that I go through between my ears. So I love, like, man, I knew last year I was going to struggle without it, and I did for a while. But this year, man, just getting right back in, it felt awesome. It felt great, because it really is, for me, it's a fraternity that I need. Even though I'm not in the NFL, I'm part of it. And, you know, again, these coaches and players I've known for, I've known a lot of these guys for, I was standing on the field today with a guy, Cedric Jones, who's a scout for the Rams. The Giants picked him when I was covering the Giants. First pick in the draft, their first round pick, I think, 96, something like that, 1996. And he and I just stand there talking old times, and that's, you know, I need things like that. So it's great. It was awesome.
All right, well, let's kick things off where you just spent some time at Cowboys camp. You always come with the big takeaways. What was your big takeaway from Cowboys camp?
Man, the guy, I just talked about Dan Quinn. I think I was talking about it because they were talking about him so much that, look, they got all these weapons on offense. And, you know, the injuries they had in the offensive line last year, even if Dak didn't get injured, like, man, you can't survive with all those offensive linemen going down. And we're talking a lot about Dak coming back, but Tyron Smith coming back, like, that's the war daddy on that team. And he's a huge difference maker. And Zach Martin coming back, that I think is going to be just as big, and no one's talking about it because we're all kind of looking at Dak. But then on defense, it's just like Dan Quinn is the most positive human being you'll ever be around in your life. Just so positive. And then last year, man, you can't build a culture. It's really hard to build a culture when you can't be in front of guys, put your hands on guys. Kind of, you know, it's a violent game. It's a game where you need everybody on the same page. That's why we're like Kevin Stefanski, what he did in Cleveland is so much more impressive, because he built a culture without really being able to put his hands on guys like everybody else can. So I think this year now, it's just totally different, where they can get in front of people, they can, you know, be more emotional, they can get face-to-face, and you're going to build that culture. And Dallas is a different place than everybody else. Like, the attention they get, the backup freaking guard, the Cowboys, gets more attention than, like, the first baseman for the Reds. You know, or the starting pitcher for the Indians.
Jay, this is Steve. I know Jason referenced the Rams a bit earlier. I want to ask not about quarterback, but about the running back play, because that seems to me as an outsider a huge question mark going in. We saw two running backs on the field last year, but my goodness, no Cam Akers, and how is the coaching staff responding?
No, they're going with the young guys. They're fine because they love Stafford so much. Like, they are so all in on Stafford, and he is. He's a lot different than Goff. I love Jared Goff. His arm talent is phenomenal. But Stafford is kind of – there's probably just a few gangsters left in this league, like old school kind of guys. You know, and you talked about my insider before of Andrew Whitworth. He's one of them. And Stafford is another. And, there's not too many of them left, like old school kind of cats. And he's one of them. So they are – they didn't panic when the running back went down, because they know kind of everything's going to go through Stafford. They were bummed because they loved Akers, and they absolutely thought this guy was going to be a star, but they are so excited about Stafford, they said, oh, we're going to go with these young guys first.
Jay Glazer with us here, Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with Steve DeSager. So you said the word panic right there, Jay, and that's kind of what's maybe setting in a bit in Indianapolis right now after today. Carson Wentz hurts his foot, and the headline that really stunned me was that, hey, the Colts expect him back this season. And it's like, whoa, back this season? What are you hearing about what's happening? What's going on here?
Well, he's meeting with Dr. Robert Anderson, who's like the foot doctor for the NFL tomorrow. And you know, what I was told this morning, or earlier this afternoon, I should say, is it's something that's probably right now they're looking at 6 to 8 weeks and possibly could rush and can get him back there for week one. But no, they don't think it's season ending. They also said, look, this, like, they were so excited about Carson Wentz. So So even if he's missing time, they're looking at it as a long-term thing, not, hey, we're just bringing him in for this 1 year. They think they're going to end up building their franchise around him like they want to, you know, what we're doing with Andrew Luck. So even if he got hurt right now, they're looking at it as a long-term thing. But they think, you know, it's they don't think it's too serious. And tomorrow they're going to decide, all right, surgery or we just rehab it and we can get, see if we can get back for week one. But again, you're 68 weeks out. So if it's 8 weeks, then it'll, you know, be more like week two or week three. But it's not like week 14. Not at this point.
It is not August yet. So does it mean anything if Travis Kelce was pulled out of practice and didn't practice today, or Dak Prescott might be on a, quote, pitch count when he resumes with the shoulder strain? Any of these guys, it's too early? We shouldn't read into any of this?
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. And you got, like I said, we have 8 weeks until the start of the season. 2 months. That's a long time.
Almost, yeah.
You can rehab for a long time. But, no, guys are pulled out constantly. There's veteran days. I wouldn't put much into it right now. No, there will be guys who go down during camp, and there will be guys who go down, unfortunately, for the whole year. Absolutely. But, you know, if a guy gets pulled out, we're going to rest him for a week. No.
Now, Jay, something I'm going to get outside of football with you here for a couple of seconds. You know, on the show with us, you have talked a lot about being the mental health warrior that you are, about mm-hmm. helping people, and everything you do with merging vets and players and Unbreakable is phenomenal stuff. And clearly the Simone Biles story this week from the Olympics is something that is front and center that involves mental health. For her, it's more, hey, I've lost my confidence because she had a really bad vault. Now I can't get back out there. She just pulled out of two more events just a little while ago. You know, what do you take away from this stuff, watching what's going on, when you've seen from Simone Biles, even though it is far away?
First of all, I want to say, you say mental health warrior. I only say mental health warrior because I fight it, because I fight my own demons, and I go through my own depression and anxiety. So it's not like I'm, this knight in shining armor. I'm not. I go through it bad every day, and that allows me to talk about it because I do fight it every day. So that's, I just want to kind of qualify that. Man, it's a hard world out there. Listen, Michael Jordan said it the other day. He walked away from basketball because there's mental health issues, because he caved, because the pressure is too much. When you have that much pressure on you, it's hard. Now, Michael Jordan did it, and there's no Twitter. There's no social media. And, look, we see all day long, even when it's not about us. When you go on Twitter, you go on Instagram, you go on Facebook, you see this stuff, all this hate constantly. When we were growing up, we didn't see that. Maybe something happened during school or something, but it was over. Or your teacher said, hey, stop bullying this kid. It was kind of over, right? This is every minute of every day we're seeing it, and we're not conditioned. The human condition is not we're not primed for that kind of hate all day long. And even when people – look, the way people tweet at you now, that's the way they come up and talk to you now. It's a different world. Some dude came up to me the other day just out of nowhere – hey, Jay, I just want to know, I believe in hate the UFC. Okay, man, thank you.
Wow.
And then he said, what do you think about the Conor McGregor fight? I said, what do you care? You hate him. Because I just didn't know what to say, so I just talked to you how I tweet.
Wow.
Do I look like a dude that you come up and say something like that too? But that's how people talk to you. But so it's a different world, man. It's a scary world. So, yeah, a girl like this, with the weighted world on your shoulders, and you just – sheer constant negativity, sheer negativity. This girl is the greatest who's ever done it. Are you kidding me? You can't take that from her. And the fact that people think it's okay to rip on her and take it from her, they got no idea. You have no idea the sacrifice that goes in to being the best. In order to be great, you got to be crazy to begin. And I'm saying that in a good way, right? So that's why I say in MVP, like, man, I'm messed up, but I'm good with my messed upness. I know my messed upness makes me great in certain things, great in areas, but also makes me struggle in others. But it pushes me, and I'm sure it pushes her also. But for people to get on her and bag on her and criticize her, how dare you? Are you kidding me? You have no idea the sacrifice that goes into it. And just because we're successful doesn't mean our hearts hurt any less when we get criticized, or she gets criticized, or people just think, you're successful and you've made it and you're rich and you're – man, our wallets are not antidepressants. And even I've said that, people criticize me over that. Oh, yeah, let me tell you something. And I've been on both. I've been broker than broke and now do well. And, man, totally different problems. it does not, money does not help matters of the heart when your heart's hurting, or between your ears is heart or is hurting. And people just really, they don't understand it. They just think you're successful. Hey, it comes with the territory. No, I think a lot of people who are successful are probably more emotional than others. So it probably hurts them most. So, man, get this girl some freaking love. She's representing this country, won an awful lot because she pulled that. And I don't think she caved during the event. I think it was building up. And if you see some interviews going into it, I wish they kind of – so maybe they did see it. I don't know what happened. But when she's talking about, hey, what's your favorite time? Well, my off time. Or when she says, I have the weight of the world on my shoulders, people just kind of take that as like a cliche term. It's not a cliche term. Having the weight of the world on your shoulders, it sucks. It's hard. And then when you do make it, let's say, or you do more, you're successful. You got your family. You got other friends. You got all these people who put their weight on your shoulders also. And then they expect certain things from you. You just don't want to let anybody down. And that pressure of not letting people down, that is awful. It's such a hard thing to deal with. And I wish people would understand it more. I don't think they will. So I think you'll see more and more athletes start saying, you know, I got to go handle myself. Because to be honest with you, a lot of times people just power through it. And, man, I have panic attacks before shows almost every damn week. And I call it my abuser. And I wrestle with my abuser every week. Every week before a show, I go through it. And I wrestle with my abuser, just hoping that the lights don't go out. And no one's going to have compassion for me. And whether they do or not, whatever. You know, if I said this right now, if I tweeted it, I guarantee if it got 1,000 tweets, 800 of them would rag on me for being a wuss. So, you know, until the rest of the world kind of gets a grasp of it and starts showing empathy for each other, you're probably going to see it more. But Simone Biles, God bless you. I'm praying for you. I'm pulling for you. And the rest of the world should too. Because what she has done for us already and what she's done for herself, she deserves to be happy.
NFL on Fox Sundays, Jay Glazer, all the great stuff he also does, merging vets and players, Unbreakable. Jay, as always, buddy, appreciate it. Fantastic stuff. Keep enjoying the Glaze across America, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Oh, yeah. Love you guys.
You too, man. See you, Jay. Have a great one.
That was good.
How about that? Some stuff from Jay Glazer. I almost have panic attacks before I go on the air every week. I mean, that we've heard that. Erin Andrews has told us before, every time she does her first hit, she almost gets sick, physically sick, before she goes on the air doing her first hit during an NFL game or whatever game she's covering. It really is eye-opening when you see things like this and hear the stories that go into it, and you go, boy, sometimes it is really difficult and is really hard for something that you see every day and go, yeah, they've been doing this for 20 years. No, still after 20 years, sometimes people struggle with doing things they've done 1,000 or a couple of thousand times.
And if you have people that have become so successful, they become a brand, if you know what I mean. So social media is obviously a business aspect of that. And then what he mentioned, all the negative aspects. And then how do you balance all of that? Man, you know, there's a lot of people want to be rich. Not a lot of people should want to be famous. There's just too much that comes with it.
And also the big NFL note that he gave us, it looks like it could be 6 to 8 weeks for Carson Wentz, not a season-ending thing, but obviously 6 to 8 weeks in July is okay, beginning of the season-ish,
yeah.
The first 4 weeks. Maybe they just trade for Nick Foles. Yeah, just come in. I mean,
just be done with it. Yeah,
I
sure.
I know. By the time I got to Twitter today, all the Nick Foles jokes were done. But I said I got to say it at least once on the air. Just
funny.
Trade for Nick Foles. That's all you got to do.
So if we're not starting till September, and we're not, but he's still got to see a foot specialist. So even the team is not saying for sure. Okay, he's got to have a minor procedure or anything like that. We're early on in the process.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcast.
Greetings and welcome inside the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon, Steve DeSager. In for Mike Harmon this evening on a day that can best be described as the wildest trade deadline we've seen in quite some time in Major League Baseball. We watched the Nationals and Cubs completely dismantle their teams, trading off all their parts. Hey, they each won the World Series. Do what we're supposed to do. Now we're moving on. We saw the big deals come down last night with the Dodgers and the Yankees. We saw more today with the Mets and the Giants. It is some kind of wildness. And now there's been a lot of good moves. What's next? Which moves are the best? Well, getting set to join us on the hotline. MLB Network, NHL Network, insider extraordinaire, a longtime friend of the show. The first thing he tweeted out today, I almost felt like he woke up. It was Christmas morning for John Paul Morosi, doing double duty with us this week. Second appearance on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. And look, JP, I know that we're prisoner of the moment sometimes, but my goodness, man, this was some kind of exciting deadline today.
Oh, my goodness. The best. Trade deadline, at least in my lifetime, and maybe ever. And it's because I think what we saw across the industry, a lot of teams that are uniquely motivated now to win. And I think there's been a couple of years of activity where maybe we can go back to 2019 where that was maybe a little bit of a quieter deadline, but it was just, it was incredible. Just to be part of it and to feel the energy of when as soon as one trade happened, then it led to the next one, the next one. I wish Jason, we could do that every single year, and I wish the Mets could make franchise-changing deals every single month. Why not, right?
Do you think this change? I mean, I love the deal. I love the Javi Baez deal because they can't score runs and their offense is moribund. They're next to the last in hits and runs. I mean, I really, he's exactly what they need. Although hearing Jacob DeGrom might not come back and pitch for September, okay, you know, Mets gonna Met. But I feel like Baez is exactly what the Mets needed.
He is, and also excellent use of the word moribund. Well done. Much easier to write that one than say it, and so I give you full marks on that one. Well done. But yes, I think that Baez, to me, is an ideal player. He fills in for Lindor while Lindor is out, and then once Lindor comes back, probably plays second base for you. And I think what my friend Harold Reynolds said on MLB Network television during the course of the day, I back up, which is that Baez will be energized by the city, by the moment, by playing with his friend, Francisco Lindor. He even said in a recent interview within the last week that he wants to play on the same team as Francisco Lindor. He thought it was going to be as a free agent. Now it's as a trade candidate. What a great story all the way around. I think that something about this just tells me it's going to be a perfect marriage for him there, and that we're going to see the very best of Javi Baez now in New York.
John, thanks again for coming on. This is Steve. A question about the deadline, and that's a real word. It actually was a deadline this season. Guys were snuck through in August through the waiver period, and going back many years, Francisco Rodriguez, not just Justin Verlander. Do you like how it is, and am I correct, that there's no switching teams as we saw in past years in August?
Well, Steve, it's a great question. The August waiver period was done away with in the last couple of years by MLB. They thought it was perhaps unfair and also a little confusing the way the stories always were written during the course of the month about trade waivers, outright waivers, a whole lot of different rules. And this is better for me. I just think it's a more straightforward and fair way to handle it. And the only way you can actually change teams in the month of August now, Steve, is if you're straight up released. So if there's a player who's at double A or triple A or the major leagues in the month of August and they're just released, they're cut from the team.
So released.
That player can still switch teams, but you cannot have an old fashioned trade. The old Justin Verlander joining your team on August 31st, that's not happening anymore. Not to save your season as it did for the Astros back in 2017.
So for clarity, if the Cubs, say, release somebody now, or in the month of August, they'd be eating that salary.
Yes, exactly. What would happen is that if the Cubs released a veteran player today, then the Cubs would owe that player the balance of that contract minus any prorated portion of the league minimum salary, mm-hmm. which a signing team would have to pay if they sign that player.
So pittance.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, a relative, at least a pittance in the baseball world. And that, my friends, has been Baseball Rules 101 with JP.
And also, inspired by one Jason Smith, pittance is also a word more often written than spoken. So
yes, we're getting
pittance. Back to you, Jason.
More abundant. Well, we're getting
well,
them
guys,
all
I mean,
here.
This has been great. We've got English lessons, baseball rules lessons, and baseball.
Oh, well, when
well
Mike,
done. This is great.
When Mike Harmon was hosting last Friday, we got two Macbeth references in the same show, so we're just keeping up the Friday nights.
Did Burnham Wood move? Is that what happened? You know, that's an old Macbeth joke. Anyways, I'll probably stop. You know, the whole thing about it.
The joke is in double toil and trouble. Yes. Okay.
There you go. Well done.
JP, you were looking for Burnham Wood coming to Dunsinane. That was the phrase.
That was very good.
That's a drop the mic.
Because you know who minored in Shakespeare at Syracuse? This guy. Okay.
Nice. Well done.
Thank you, JP. So foul and fair a day. No, so if I'm taking a look at all these deadline deals today, look, I love the buy. Look, a lot of the trades I love. Look, the White Sox got richer with Kimbrel. It's not like their bullpen was bad. It was good. Now they may be unbeatable. But the team that needed to make the move the most today, and they did, was the Giants getting Chris Bryant, because they shouldn't be this good. These are guys that were, you know, just okay players, mainly, you know, 5-6 years ago, and they're all somehow all coming together, and they're gelling at the right time, and they're in sync, but they really needed somebody else to come in, a proven hitter that can mash. And I think the Giants getting Bryant was the biggest move of the day.
I agree. Huge move. And also, Bryant is an ideal guy for them because he can move around the diamond for you. I think that's a really underrated quality, especially when you're looking for a short-term bat. He just makes so much sense to them. And you think about it, he can play first, he can play third, play left, play right if he had to. He's just a really nice bat to have to mix in there. And so I think that for the Giants, you know, you look at that competitive division, and of course we know how good the Dodgers are. They had Scherzer, they had Turner. But I think for the Giants, you're exactly right. The Giants had a much better deadline than the Padres did, who were pretty quiet. So I think by that standard, they really improved themselves, and they're already in first place. And I would have liked to have seen them add a pitcher. But I think overall this is how they've got to this point, and the Giants have to basically now just continue on with a proven World Series champion in Bryant now in the lineup for the last 2 months.
John, one of the things I hate about moves during the NBA seasons is how talented players can kind of pick their next team mid-season,
right,
and they still get full payment out of all of this. What about what baseball still does and what we see in some of this week's moves? There's cash included in the deal to help pay for this guy. I mean, didn't cash come with David Price to the Dodgers to help pay for that guy? So they were basically saying, like Romeo and Juliet, I have no joy in this contract. What do you think? What do you think about that?
First of all, how literary are the two of you tonight? I mean, I am here impressed. I cannot talk the breadth of sports with you guys, nor can I quote Shakespeare at your level. I am simply agog at what I am seeing here. But I would say this: the contractual the ability to send money with a player is crucial, because often it allows the team to actually get a better prospect in return. So all is well. My fair gentleman in this respect.
Well, you say all's well that ends well. I thought that's what you were going to say.
that's also a Shakespeare line.
Yes.
So all's well that ends well. Yes, exactly. Well done.
All right. Well, you can be the Fortinbras of this conversation, JP. So judging by last night, okay, we watched the big moves last night. The Dodgers go get two players, which, look, just clearly put them over the top. Getting Scherzer and getting Trey Turner, even though it's going to be a few more days for Trey Turner to come in and play, I don't know that there's anything that can stop the Dodgers from the World Series. I mean, really, look, the Giants made a great move, and the Padres are still going to be good. We have to see Tatis left the game tonight with a shoulder injury, so we got to watch that. But the Padres lost out on Scherzer. The Dodgers go out and get one of the top five pitchers and top five shortstops in baseball. What's going to stop them from getting to the series?
The Milwaukee Brewers. The Milwaukee Brewers. Check out that rotation. Woodruff, Burns, Peralta, backed up by Josh Hader in the pen. They ended up adding John Curtis, Daniel Norris today, a couple more savvy moves there by the Brewers. I'm telling you, I am all in on Milwaukee. They added Eduardo Escobar. They make one smart move after another, and they're my pick right now in the NL. I mean, it was maybe a little bit of my Midwestern bias there. I made that pick probably like a couple weeks ago. I said, all right, halfway through the season, we're going to go Brewers and White Sox in the World Series. All Midwest. Love the way they play, guys. They have a great style about them. We also have not seen the best of Christian Yelich yet this season. Mm-hmm. I'm all in on the crew, guys. I'm not going to represent the Midwest, who will? I have
exactly.
to represent the Midwest here.
We did talk about a team before you joined us, the Seattle Mariners, that they are legitimately a contender, only a couple games out of the wild card, and yet those batting averages are just what shouldn't be for a contending team. In fact, as Hamlet once said, oh, my offense is rank, it smells to heaven. The Mariners would say, oh, my offense is rank, it smells to heaven. They are by far the worst offense in baseball, not just among contenders. How is this happening?
First of all, it doesn't count
question.
If you look it up, Steve. It
I
doesn't
had to look
count.
That
you
one
gotta
up.
Know
Absolutely.
It off the top of your head.
I'm not a Shakespeare major.
I know it off
major.
The top of my head. All right?
No, first of all, Steve's word choice is impeccable, as is his diction. All very good. The Mariners, I'm with you. They should have made a more impactful move than they did at the deadline this year. And all that conversation this week about the situation with Kendall Graveman, what was going on with him, and of course he got traded there. There was the strong emotional reaction by the teammates there with the Mariners. Guys, I really thought they should have made probably a little bolder move. Maybe Jose Berríos. Instead, Berríos goes to Toronto. They were able to pay a very good prospect price, I thought, that the Jays were. So, yes, I think a missed opportunity by the Seattle Mariners there, and it looks like their playoff drought may well include now a second decade, as it's been 20 years since the Mariners' last playoff berth. Mm.
All right, JP, lastly, we watched the Yankees get a couple of guys where they said, hey, we need more people to hit the ball into the short porch in right field. You're right. Let's go do it. So they go get Rizzo, who hits one tonight. They get Joey Gallo. The Yankees clearly showing that we're going to try to mash people. And when once you get into October, when starting pitching matters a little bit less, we can trot out our bullpen. Maybe things will be better. I kind of like the Yankees, their approach to this deadline, saying we got to score more runs. Getting the big pitchers wasn't going to happen. So let's go get the hitters that can go drive the ball more. Don't have to worry about injuries. I really like what the Yankees did.
I do, too, and I think this is a team that had a clear need. I think we talked about it last time I was on the show, about all the dearth of lefty power on this team and how it's been their identity for so long and just hasn't been this year. I really thought that they made two impactful big-name moves. It's going to change the nature of their club. And I credit Harold Reynolds, my colleague there at MLB Network Television. He made a great point about how really Gallo could be mentored by Rizzo, and how having another lefty power hitter is really going to make a huge impact on him. So, love the move on and off the field. I think it's going to be great for the Yankees. And guys, I mean, just think about the great races that we have now setting up. We got the AL East. The Yankees getting a lot better. They're trying to chase down the Red Sox and the Rays, and then out west, of course, in the AL, and the way that I think, you know, Oakland has played so well, and Houston's played great of late. And then the NL East gets better. There's a little team in New York called the Mets, Jason. I think you're familiar with them. They got really good, I think, with the Baez addition. So it's going to be a great race to the finish, guys. It was a great day for baseball today. I'm telling you, I've been going since like 6 in the morning, and I feel great. And the amount of energy that this day has given me and all of us has been pretty cool to see.
Well, I'll tell you, it's John Paul Morosi. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. First, I got to say two things to you in parting, JP. Number one, beginning of the season, the Brewers were my surprise World Series pick in the National League. I'm on the
Brewers. Good choice.
And secondly, I saw your name in a very big industry internet story earlier this week about one of the top 20 people under the age of 40 in the sports business. I think you should check it out.
I am grateful to have been nominated by one Jason Smith, and I'm grateful to have friends in high places that Jason nominated me. So Jason, my friend, thank you for that. You are far too kind. Really appreciate you thinking of me in that context. It meant the world to me, and that you shared the story about speaking Italian. That meant the world to me too. It was a very very cool honor, my friend. Really appreciated that.
Oh, you are welcome, my friend. I just wanted to see the story, because that story when you did the interview in Italy just to win that bet. I mean, that was all I can do.
I found a true Olympic spirit. I found a friend of mine who is somebody that actually legitimately has an Italian baseball show in Italian in Italy, and I said, okay, we're going to do this. Jason Smith, I basically said, I got to make sure that I do this for Jason Smith. We're going to do a show in Italian on baseball. I said, okay, certamente, and then we did it, and it worked out great. I love it.
As always, great stuff, my friend. Outstanding. Enjoy the weekend, and if anything else happens, we'll call you back in a half hour.
Please do. Exactly. I will, it's like a 24 hours of JP on Fox Sports Radio. We can make it a full loop, bat all the way around. And again, thanks for having me finish my trade deadline day with both of you. It means the world to me, Steve and Jason. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, take it easy, JP. Have fun. Just real quick, Steve, I'll tell you. So, you know, he comes on, he's Italian. He throws around all these Italian phrases. And I said, all right, you got to stop. Now, I challenge you. You have to do an interview sometime in the next few days on the radio or TV. And you have to speak Italian during the entire interview, and you can't tell the hosts why you're speaking Italian. And then you got to post it on social media somewhere. And he goes, all right, I'll figure it out.
Wow.
And then he posts it. He called a TV station in Italy and did an interview. Well, completely in Italian. He didn't have to explain why. And then he posted it, and I said, that's a nice job, John Paul.
I'm glad that worked, but he is, with international baseball, the one guy to be talking about that subject, because he's been all over the Olympic qualifying months and years ago leading up to these games. We're probably not going to get baseball in the next Olympics. Paris, France is not going to build baseball stadiums for a two-week tournament. But, 2028, it's back in L.A., the summer games, and I'm sure we'll have baseball, softball back then. So Mike Socha managing the U.S. They beat Israel in the opener 8-1, and U.S. against South Korea early tomorrow. We do have international baseball.